The north of Iraq, where most of that country's Kurdish minority lives, has been insulated from the rule of Saddam Hussein for 10 years. In the aftermath of the Gulf War, a Kurdish uprising was crushed and refugees streamed north of the border into Turkey. They were coaxed back with assurances of protection. U.S. and British patrols still guard the region, which is nominally still Iraq, but functionally autonomous of Baghdad. Michael Rubin, an American historian, recently spent 9 months in the region teaching there, and he reports that despite the same sanctions that operate against the rest of the country, northern Iraq is not experiencing the same privation as the rest of the country. Michael Rubin, first, how do the sanctions work in the north of Iraq?
The way the sanctions work is, under the terms of the Oil for Food program, the northern provinces get 13% of that revenue, which is based on the proportion of their population, and the United Nations distributes it, administers it, through the so-called Oil for Food program, which goes to build schools, to build hospitals, for rations, and for most other development programs.
Does the money pass through Baghdad on its way up to Sulaymaniyah, where you were, or the other cities in the north?
The money does not pass through Baghdad, but everything under terms of the 1995 Memorandum of Understanding is coordinated through Baghdad. The UN in Iraq works like nowhere else that the UN operates. Everything has to be administered through Baghdad.
Well, the sanctions' effect on most of Iraq has been reported widely throughout the world. The Iraqi government points out that it's been devastating to the health of the country, that there are shortages of the food and medicine, and that many, many children, they say, have died because of the effects of the sanctions. What do you see in the way of the effects of the sanctions in northern Iraq?
Actually, in northern Iraq, and it's under the exact same sanctions as everywhere else, the only difference is Saddam Hussein does not control the day-to-day operations. The north has never benefited so much. This was a region that was subjected to chemical weapons attacks, that had 5,000 villages razed to the ground by Saddam Hussein. And now I'm walking around northern Iraq, and there are infrared scanners in the supermarkets. I could get Haagen-Dazs. I could get everything I wanted in every market. Basically, there is baby formula. And even according to the UN statistics, infant mortality has actually declined in the northern Iraq since the imposition of sanctions.
You could get Haagen-Dazs or other delicacies.
Right.
Could the Kurds or the other people who live there also afford those things?
Yes. The short answer is yes. I've traveled around Iran, I've traveled around Afghanistan and throughout the region at length, and I've never seen people eat as well as they did. Meat, often, maybe 5 times a week, which in an impoverished area is quite good. The markets were full. One of the big differences is that when people see images of the suffering in Iraq, they're seeing images from journalists and television crews that are being taken around by Saddam Hussein's minders. I had the freedom to walk where I wanted to go and to drive where I wanted to go without any prearrangement and without any escort.
Did most of the people whom you came to know in your several months in the north of Iraq, did they assume that their present situation is something transitory that will ultimately result in them rejoining the rest of Iraq in some post-Saddam Hussein era? Or do they figure they're staking out, for now, a de facto autonomy and, at some point down the line, a real independence?
They have a de facto autonomy. Their main concern is that they have no idea what the future will hold for them. They basically said that they could fight against troops, they could fight against tanks, they could fight against helicopters, but they can't fight against chemical weapons. And so if Saddam moved north, 2 million would flee into Turkey, 1 million would flee into Iran, and we'd have a repeat of the refugee crisis of 1991. Now, regarding the future, they do not want independence. In fact, they're very adamant that they are still part of Iraq. One example, aside from using Iraqi passports, Iraqi currency and such, I got to the university on January 6th to give an exam. My students hadn't told me that the university was closed January 6th. Students can be like that. Why not? It was Iraqi Army Day. Well, I asked some politicians, why the heck are you closing for Iraqi Army Day? These are the people that dropped chemical weapons on you. And they said, no, the government of Saddam Hussein dropped chemical weapons on us. A lot of Kurds were part of the Iraqi army. Kurds are part of the Iraqi state. What we want is more of a federalism. We want some self-control over our local affairs. We don't want to be dominated by a dictator in Baghdad.
As you see it, the vast majority, obviously, of the UN's Oil for Food program dollars go to the rest of Iraq. Something else is happening with that money. Something else is happening that isn't creating, in your view, the kind of day-to-day prosperity that people might be enjoying and are enjoying in the northern and autonomous regions of Iraq. Where's it going? Where's the money going, in your view?
Well, on December 31st, there was a large military parade. BBC showed a 10-second clip of it. On Iraqi television, I was treated to a 13-hour clip of it, and it showed Saddam's army marching in a military parade in Baghdad in brand new uniforms with very new equipment, and people I was watching this with said, why doesn't the West do anything? Can't they see that Saddam Hussein is flouting his breaking of sanctions? Oftentimes, Saddam Hussein claims that it's because of sanctions that many, many people in Iraq are starving. What people in the North, and I'm not just talking Kurds, I'm talking Arabs who come up to visit to go shopping and such, say is, how come the West doesn't see through this? After all, forget the Iran-Iraq war, under Saddam Hussein's economic policies in the 1980s, the same amount of people died.
Well, Michael Rubin, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Historian Michael Rubin, who spent 9 months in the north of Iraq, is now a visiting fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy.